Chapter 3.
Gun down, got your finger on the trigger now. Put it down, put it down, put it down, put it down. Put the gun down, put the gun down. I'm gonna set fire to the whole damn house. Put it down, put it down, put it down, put it down.
It's almost hilarious, Tony muses, to watch Steve trying to explain things like cell phones and rock music and the internet. Tony hadn't exactly meant to spy on Steve and Bucky. Well, he had at first. During the long night when they'd first brought Bucky in, Tony sat in his workshop watching Steve sit in the hallway and stare miserably at Bucky's unconscious form. Tony had watched, silently torn between raging jealousy and desperate desire to try and comfort Steve, and determinedly ignoring both. And when Sam's call had pulled Steve out of bed that morning, Tony couldn't resist pulling up the screen to watch, just in case. In case what? He wouldn't let himself specify. Later that afternoon, after Tony had finally finished ignoring Fiore's calls, assuring Pepper everything was fine, sorting out a mildly explosive situation in the Stark Industries R&D department, and conferring with Maria Hill about making sure the tower's security was at the top of its game, again, just in case, he'd retreated back to his workshop and pulled up the video feed from Bucky's room while skimming through the reports of the doctors who'd examined Bucky, ignoring only a mild sense of guilt. It's not like he's the only one doing it, Tony points out to himself. Sam and Bruce are not so subtly taking turns making sure they stop by the room to check in at least every hour. Tony hasn't seen Clint or Natasha since the team had dispersed on the first night, but he highly doubts they've gone far, and would be willing to stake money on Clint lurking somewhere in the vents over the medbay. Only Thor, who had readily agreed that his presence might be a little too much for Bucky to handle in his current state, is out keeping an eye on the city, while the rest of the Avengers are distracted. Tony is pulled abruptly from his amused jealousy when he reaches the X-ray depicting Bucky's left shoulder and side. He stares at it in confounded horror for several minutes, white-hot rage rushing through him and wiping out everything else. Tony had never been an optimist about the human condition, and even less so since becoming Iron Man and discovering Stan's betrayal. But he still finds himself almost unable to believe that someone could do that to another human being. His eyes flick over metal support struts, massive screws drilled into bone, bones replaced or encased in metal, sensors and wires extending right to the spinal column and wrapping around it. It's a goddamn miracle Bucky survived that thing being installed. After that, the video feed from the medbay is really just background noise. Tony's innate engineer takes over as he studies the scans and starts almost automatically working on schematics and redesigns. He only glances at the video occasionally, making distracted mental notes about how crooked Bucky's shoulders look when he sits up fully, how he seems to be avoiding using the left hand unless he absolutely has to, the way he responds when Steve touches it. It must weigh a ton. It's obviously putting strain on his back and shoulders despite the ample if barbaric bracing structure built in under his skin. Probably hurts like a bitch, too. Tony wonders distractedly about grip strength and dexterity. He knows it can pack quite a wallop. He's seen the shaky cell phone footage of Steve and the Winter Soldier fighting on the bridge, and he's listened to Steve talk, haltingly, brokenly, about what it felt like to get hit by the thing. How is it powered? Obviously, Bucky gets some sensory feedback from it, but how much, and what kind of feedback? When Bucky does move the limb, it looks smooth, almost natural. Again, thinking back on the Winter Soldier's fighting, his reflexes are fast enough to keep up with Steve, to overpower him even, which means they're far beyond normal human reflexes. He doesn't even have to start from scratch. It's easy enough to pull some of the schematics on the armored systems and start modifying them. He very quickly realizes, however, that before he can get any real work done, he'll have to examine the current model more closely. He highly doubts they'll be able to do much about the hardware drilled into Bucky's body. Even if they were willing to put Bucky through that, it's hard to say what will be left after the hardware was taken out. And enhanced healing or not, it's not worth the risk. The arm itself, however, has to have ways into it for upgrades and repairs. Once Tony has a better understanding of how it works, he can gut the damn thing and make it infinitely better. Maybe detach the whole casing and replace even the outside with something lighter. But to do that, he needs to examine it, and preferably get a thorough 3D scan of both the interior and the exterior, so he and Jarvis can pick apart what they're working with. A quick glance back at the video feed tells him that Steve and Bucky are just starting dinner. Some kind of rice and chicken. Tony remembers the notes in the medical file expressing concerns about scar tissue in Bucky's stomach from the cryo-freezing, though he hasn't seemed to have any trouble with the food they've given him yet. A quick dig through his workshop, and he finds a prototype scanning device that meets his requirements. And after half an hour or so of tinkering, it is both operational and portable. Then he and the scanning device are on their way to the medbay without a second thought. He stops just outside of Bucky's room. For a moment, he isn't sure what caused him to stop. His chest feels uncomfortably tight for no apparent reason, until he realizes what he's looking at. It's Steve, staring soulfully into Bucky's eyes like they're in a goddamn Harlequin romance novel. Then Bucky leans forward and... Tony isn't surprised. For a long minute, he just stands there, watching. His stomach is tight and twisted, but it isn't as devastating as he'd expected, seeing them together. He'd known it was inevitable, and yeah, he's jealous, but there's also something so natural about the way their lips fit together, the way they're drawn towards each other like magnets. Something tugs low in Tony's chest that is not jealousy, and he refuses to acknowledge or analyze that right now. The kiss lasts scant seconds. Then Bucky is settling back against the pillows with a satisfied smirk and what can only be described as bedroom eyes. And if he was looking at anyone but Steve, Tony would have found it hilarious. Steve is still blushing and looking dazed, but Tony decides not to let himself linger. He could slink back to the workshop, pretend he hadn't seen anything. He could give in to the inevitable and just let Steve go. But he's already tried that. He's already sat in the dark of his workshop and brooded himself sick. And Tony Stark has never slunk away from anything in his life. So, he forces a deep breath into his lungs, filling them all the way, and pastes his best, most disarming smirk on, before pushing his way loudly into the room. Steve starts like he has been shot, and he flushes guiltily. Tony doesn't spare him more than an absent glance, however, and focuses instead on the reasons he's here. That shiny, monstrous metal arm. Bucky displays no guilt. Though, why would he? As far as he knows, Steve is still his to kiss all he wants. But watches Tony with a wary sort of curiosity. Hi there, Tony Stark. And wow, is it weird to actually meet someone who doesn't already know that? Tony says, determinedly steamrolling right over Steve's reaction and his own firmly suppressed emotions. Bucky blinks. Stark? As in the Stark Expo? Not the one you're thinking of. That was my dad. And honestly, it's probably for the best that you don't remember meeting him. And that was the one thing that could possibly make this situation better. Bringing his dad into it. Anyway, I'm here about your arm. Bucky blinks again, then turns to Steve. I met Howard Stark? He asks, with something that almost sounds like amazement in his voice. Because Tony needs another kick in the teeth right now. Steve grimaces slightly. But before he can answer, Bucky has already redirected his attention back to Tony.
What about my arm?
Bucky doesn't even seem to notice that he has curled both of his arms in against his body, posture defensive while his voice hovers between confused and curious.
It is both barbaric and a beautiful mystery, and I need to fix it, Tony says breezily.
He pushes his scanner around to the left side of the bed, conveniently the opposite side from where Steve is currently sitting. Bucky eyes the scanner, then Tony, then turns to Steve uncertainly. Steve is frowning, lips pursed tight, and his eyes are moving from Bucky to Tony and back again. He looks tense, like he's waiting for something. But when he meets Bucky's eyes, he gives Bucky a reassuring smile.
Tony's the best engineer in the world, he says.
Bucky considers, looking down at his metal hand as he flexes the finger slowly.
Did you make it?
He asks, turning his attention back to Tony.
No,
Tony says, a little surprised at the vehemence that comes out in his own voice.
I'm not that much of an asshole. I'm just the guy who's going to remake and do it better.
Bucky looks faintly confused, but he nods.
What do you need to do?
He asks.
For now, I just need to scan it. Maybe poke around a little under the hood. Once I know better how it works, I can get to work on the redesigns.
Tony busies himself with checking the scanner, making sure it's calibrated correctly, and its direct uplink to Jarvis is online.
Jarvis, you reading me, buddy?
All systems are operational.
Jarvis reports, which makes Bucky start violently. Bucky's head whips around, first looking towards the door, then around the room, then up towards the ceiling. His expression of shocked confusion, his really blue eyes going wide and mouth pursing tight, is hilarious, and Tony makes a half-hearted attempt at hiding his sniggering behind the scanner.
Tony, Steve admonishes, distracted from his worrying over Bucky by Tony's inappropriate laughter.
I mean, really, Steve, Tony defends, still grinning. You spent all day blathering at him about YouTube and text messaging, but you didn't bother introducing him to Jarvis?
The future is wasted on you.
Where is he? Bucky asks, still looking around as though Jarvis might pop out from under his bed or something.
Everywhere,
Tony shrugs.
In this building, at least. Jarvis is an AI, an artificial intelligence. He is a computer program, but a really advanced one. He runs the building, and I mean the entire building. Seriously, do not piss him off. Your toilet will no longer flush, your toast will not toast, and you'll be forced to climb an utterly unreasonable amount of stairs.
Tony shudders a little for emphasis because, yes, he is in fact still traumatized from the little spat he and Jarvis had during the process of rebuilding the tower. Bucky is staring at him, and his expression is tight, looking almost pained. For a second, Tony worries that he's somehow broken Bucky's brain, but then Bucky bursts out laughing. It's loud and sudden, and both Tony and Steve jump a little at the rough bark of it.
So you're telling me, Bucky says, once he's caught his breath, that there's, like, a person living in the walls of the buildings in the future?
Bucky looks absolutely delighted.
Only this one. Jarvis is one of a kind, Tony says, with no small amount of pride.
This is even crazier than a comic book, Bucky declares, but he's still grinning.
I take it back. I'm not sure if I believe you anymore, Steve. This has got to be some kind of nutty dream.
Well, if that's the case, you're in luck, pal. The only dreams I participate in are the wet kinds, Tony answers, his mouth running on automatic as he maneuvers the scanner into position. Besides, expecting this much awesome from your subconscious is a lot to ask. Bucky eyes the scanner with a degree of skepticism.
Yeah, the talking walls are pretty neat, but that thing doesn't look like much.
I wasn't talking about the machines, Tony smirks, with his best self-acknowledging head tilt. Bucky laughs again,
and it transforms his entire face. The pallor of his cheeks and dark circles under his eyes disappear as his eyes crinkle up into slits and his teeth flash, white and sharp. For a minute, Tony isn't looking at Bucky Barnes, love of Steve's life, or the pieces of the Winter Soldier left behind after Hydra's collapse. For a minute, he's looking at Sergeant Barnes, the flower of American youth who stood shoulder to shoulder with Captain America in the old propaganda films, and it's breathtaking. But then the moment passes, and Steve is holding a small, wary smile, and Bucky is watching Tony expectantly, and Tony forcibly pushes his mind back to the moment. "So what does that thing do?" Bucky asks, gesturing again to the scanner. He's still smiling a little, but there's a wary edge to it. "It's a fancy camera," Tony answers, oversimplifying with a shrug. "It's going to make a digital three-dimensional image of your arm, inside and out, so that I can pick it apart and recreate it, only better." Bucky nods slowly. "Sure, okay. What do I do?" "Just lay your arm out beside you on the bed there and hold still," Tony instructs. He reaches out, adjusting Bucky's arm without thinking about it, moving it to lay flat against the mattress, palm down. As soon as he touches it, a part of his brain veers off course in distraction, automatically noting the surface temperature of the metal, the way the plates shift and fit together under his touch, the faint hum of mechanisms working beneath the outer casing. He doesn't realize that he's lingered longer than necessary until Bucky clears his throat slightly. "Is there a problem?" Bucky asks. And there's something in Bucky's voice that makes Tony think maybe Bucky isn't complaining about the lingering touch. Tony shakes himself quickly and withdraws, adjusting the scanner again unnecessarily. "Nope, all good. Just hold still." "Sure thing, champ," Bucky says, letting his head rest back against the pillows he's propped on. After a quiet minute, Bucky rolls his head over to Steve. "Hey, Stevie, what are the chances I can get a smoke around here?" Steve hesitates, rubbing the back of his neck awkwardly. "Actually, turns out that's really bad for you," he says, his forehead wrinkling. "Huh, no kidding," Bucky huffs. "So people don't do that anymore?" "Oh, no, they still do it," Tony answers for Steve. "Humanity loves self-destruction. Just mostly you have to do it outside now. Probably wouldn't affect you much anyhow." Steve tenses, making an abortive jerking motion that catches Tony's attention and shakes his head. Luckily, Bucky doesn't seem to notice. He's distracted by Tony readjusting his metal hand, turning it palm up this time so that the scanner can continue from a different angle. "Does it hurt?" Tony asks, both as a further distraction and because it's a pertinent question, one that has been burning in the back of his mind since he'd first looked at the x-rays earlier. Bucky frowns, staring down at the hand as Tony manipulates each finger joint in turn. His frowns deepen, his eyes tracking Tony's movement automatically. He pauses and blinks. Then his face twists into something strange and complicated. "Yeah, I think so." Bucky's eyes start to go unfocused, a shadow of the lost, uncertain look from that first night on the street creeping back onto his face. "That's weird, right? I mean, I didn't notice before, and now..." Steve lurches forward, starting to reach for Bucky, a look of panic on his face. But Tony quickly waves Steve off, pulling Bucky's focus onto himself instead. "Hey, Bucky, I'm gonna be straight with you here." Bucky's eyes, so big and so blue, lock onto Tony's. "This arm, it's pretty messed up. The people who made it and put it on you, they were nuts, and they didn't care about how much it hurt you. But those people are long gone now, and I'm gonna fix it. I'll build you a whole new arm if you have to, because I can do that, and it's going to be incredible. Like, seriously, it's going to blow this antique hunk of junk out of the water, just you watch." Bucky stares at him for a long minute, Then all at once, the tension drains out of Bucky's shoulders, and he does that crooked little grin again as he relaxes back against the pillows.
"You're making some pretty big promises there," Bucky says, one eyebrow quirked.
"And following through on big promises is what storks do," Tony insists smoothly. "Jarvis, how are we doing?"
"The scan is 87% complete, sir,"
Jarvis answers promptly.
"There appear to be access panels on the inside of the forearm and behind the back shoulder plate, if you wish for an unobstructed view of the inner workings."
"Excellent. Let's open her up and take a look," Tony grins, quickly finding the edges of the panel Jarvis referred to on the forearm and popping it open. Bucky starts violently, and it occurs to Tony belatedly that seeing the inner workings of your own arm might be a little unsettling to some people. Of course, just as soon as the realization occurs to him, it vanishes again as the wave of, "Whoa, look at this tech," washes over him. Tony pokes at wires and actuators, adjusts transducers, and pulls out an outdated, frankly ancient, tracking device. "Jarvis, run another check to make sure there aren't any surprises," Tony says, picking apart the tracking device with a frown before setting it aside. Steve, who has been fidgeting in increasing discomfort while trying to distract Bucky from Tony's work, jerks, his head snapping to look at Tony.
"There is a suspicious canister near the shoulder plate and what appears to be a short circuit switch in the elbow joint,"
Jarvis replies helpfully. "Got it," Tony confirms, his tongue poking out between his teeth as he digs deeper into Bucky's arm. Bucky's breath catches, and he squirms a little, but he doesn't actually protest or try to pull away from Tony, and Steve's hand on his other arm seems to be keeping him relatively calm. Luckily, the switch and the canister are both as outdated as a tracker, and it's easy enough to pry them out without disrupting any of the rest of the circuitry.
"One more thing,"
Tony mutters, after he's set the canister aside. He checks the schematics that Jarvis has built from the scans, confirming what he thought he had seen. Neither Steve nor Bucky say anything as Tony dives into the arm once more. Tony grunts, sorting carefully through the wires to find the right one, and... "Aha!" he mutters in triumph. Bucky jerks, making a startled sound, and then goes limp, slumping back bonelessly against the pillows. "What did you do?" Steve asks, looking alarmed.
"It doesn't hurt anymore," Bucky says, sounding dazed. It hurts less."
"I cut the sensory feedback relay," Tony says. "It's only a temporary measure, since the arm won't function as well without it, but give me a day or two and I can redesign the system to provide you with sensory feedback without doing whatever it was doing that was making it hurt."
Bucky blinks.
"Okay," he says after a pause. He doesn't so much as twitch when Tony closes the access panels with a snap.
I'm kind of tired," he says after another minute,
glancing towards Steve in a way that looks uncomfortably like he's asking for permission. Steve forces a small, reassuring smile for Bucky's sake, and he pats Bucky's flushed shoulder.
"Yeah, of course," Steve says, all faux cheerfulness. "It's been a long day. You should get some rest."
Bucky nods, eyes already drooping. Tony decidedly busies himself packing up his tools and the devices he'd pulled out of the arm, pretending not to notice Steve's hand lingering on Bucky's arm or the dopey half-smile on Bucky's face as he stares at Steve. Giving himself another minute to stall, Tony glances at his phone and finds a text from Bruce.
"Team dinner in the kitchen. Bring Steve."
When Tony turns back toward the bed, Bucky's eyes are closed, and Steve is staring at Bucky with a mixed expression of open adoration and an aching longing. He jerks when he realizes Tony is looking at him, expression quickly shutting down and going carefully neutral. Tony keeps his face just as blank and gestures with his phone.
"Team dinner, we gotta go," he says.
Steve starts to shake his head immediately. I can't leave. You can, and you're going to. Tony overrides him. Bruce's text had been pointed, and even if it hadn't, Tony can see the strain in Steve's face. He's asleep. Jarvis will let us know if he wakes up, and if it makes you feel better, you can leave him a note or something. Steve opens his mouth to make another attempt at protesting, but then his shoulders slump, and he nods. Yeah, okay. He sighs. He glances once more at Bucky, his expression briefly twisting up into something complicated and pained, before he stuffs it all back down again and heaves himself to his feet. This is actually going to be a team talk about Bucky, isn't it? Steve asks, sounding resigned. Absolutely, Tony agrees, putting on a merciless smirk as he nudges Steve towards the door. The elevator ride up to the communal kitchen is stiff and awkward, in a way that being alone with Steve hasn't been since the team first formed. Steve can't seem to look at Tony, and he shifts from one foot to the other, rubbing at the back of his neck no less than 6 times in the span of 3 floors. It is not a slow elevator. Relax, Steve, Tony says, taking pity on him, though admittedly with his usual lack of social finesse. I saw the kiss, and I'm not mad about it. Steve jerks like he has been shot, wide eyes flicking to finally look at Tony. What? He sputters. I'm not mad. It's fine. Tony repeats with a shrug. Not like I didn't see it coming, he adds after a beat. He tries to push a reassuring smile onto his face and finds it surprisingly easy. It's almost alarming to realize that he isn't lying. He genuinely isn't upset about the kiss. At least, not anymore. Steve bites his lip, starting to look a little wet around the eyes. His hands dangle at his sides, alternately curling and loosening again, as though he wants to reach out and is restraining himself. I meant what I said last night, he says after a moment, his voice a little rough. I don't want to lose you. I don't want... He breaks off, the muscles in his neck working as he struggles. Tony sighs. He reaches out and pulls Steve in, wrapping his arms around Steve's waist and pressing his nose into the hollow of Steve's throat. It's partially selfish, because while he isn't mad, there is still a faint ache in his chest and a kind of exhaustion pulling on his bones, and he would happily live the rest of his life breathing into Steve's Adam's apple if he could. Steve stiffens, hesitating. Then his entire body seems to sag into Tony, and he hugs Tony tight, burying his face in Tony's hair. I'm not going anywhere, Tony says, after a long, quiet minute. I'm pretty used to getting what I want. And if you and Barnes come as a set now, well, we'll find a way to make that work. He feels Steve inhale to speak, but keeps going before Steve can get any words out. I'm not saying it will be easy. I'm not promising or suggesting anything. I'm just saying I'm not willing to let you go. And I'm not enough of an asshole to make you give him up either. The rest will sort out eventually. Sometime when the entire team isn't about to be yelling at us. His words are timed perfectly with the polite ping of warning that signals the elevator is about to stop. Steve groans softly, arms tightening briefly around Tony before reluctantly letting go. You really think they're going to yell? He asks with trepidation. The entire team is going to be in a room together. There is going to be yelling, that's a given, and you've been around long enough to know that, Tony points out. They probably will not be yelling at you, but there will be yelling. As if right on cue, the doors open on Clint's shout of, I swear to God, Wilson, get your damn fingers out of my pasta sauce. Tony squeezes Steve's hand and gives him a grin.
Home sweet home.
The bustle of team dinner proves to be a soothingly familiar affair. There are, as predicted, a fair amount of raised voices, but mostly only playful jabs, light banter, and efforts to be heard over the general din of the crowd. Tony notes distractedly that despite having technically already eaten dinner earlier with Bucky, Steve still demolishes his usual share of pasta and Clint's special homemade sauce. In fact, really the only sign that there has been any upset to the team lately is the reduced number of projectiles that get tossed around, and the fact that everyone is shooting glances at Steve every couple of minutes. Some covert, and some not so much. It's Thor who first breaks the unspoken no-talking-about-Bucky rule. He leans back from his empty plate, rubbing his stomach absently, and declares, "I'm pleased to hear that our lost friend seems to be settling well." Steve does not look pleased. He's been quiet and withdrawn throughout the meal, not entirely unusual for him, but a noticeable tension in the air, and at Thor's words, his face twists into something that does not at all reflect the seemingly calm and even cheerful day he's had reconnecting with his long-lost best friend. "Yeah," he says anyway. He seems good. "And yet a dark cloud still hangs over you," Thor observes, leaning forward slightly. "You remain troubled." Steve glances around the room uncertainly, and for a second it looks like he isn't going to answer Thor's sidelong question. But there's something about Thor, about his earnesty and his unfailing optimism, that no one on the team has managed to develop an immunity to yet, least of all Steve, who is otherwise recalcitrant with his feelings at best. "I guess I'm just still waiting for the other shoe to drop," Steve says eventually. His gaze moves to Bruce, and his expression turns almost hopeful, nonverbally asking his own sidelong question. Bruce sighs, taking his glasses off and cleaning it with the tail of his shirt, looking apologetic. "It is a possibility," Bruce says, once he's settled his glasses back on the bridge of his nose. "Frankly, what we don't know about the human brain far outweighs what we do know. And that's without even considering the impact of the serum." "You think the scar tissue might still heal?" Natasha asks, because, of course, she has read the doctor's reports, too. Bruce shrugs. "We don't know. But that's also not the only way the serum works. The brain is a powerful thing. And even with people who are unenhanced, there have been cases of the brain essentially rewiring itself so as to function around damage. So basically, at any moment, he could wake up and be the Winter Soldier again," Clint guesses gloomily. "Not exactly," Bruce shakes his head. "The areas where the damage is located are associated with memory encoding and memory retrieval. There is some evidence to suggest that the damage to the frontal lobe, which is vital to memory retrieval, used to be much more extensive and has healed to some degree. Probably why he remembers his own identity now and couldn't before. He likely won't lose that again, not without some new trauma to disrupt the retrieval process." Tony isn't listening to Bruce's lecture on neurology. He's read the doctor's notes himself. Instead, he's watching the others. Natasha's eyes are sharp and narrowed, filing away everything Bruce says. Sam's nodding in agreement. He has been conferring with the doctors too, and has probably already discussed all of this with Bruce. Clint's expression is pinched and slightly squinted, waiting for Bruce to get past the technical stuff and fill in enough of the big picture for Clint to make something useful out of it. Thor's look is of serious consideration, seemingly following the conversation well, despite the radically different approach Asgardians have toward the medical field. And Steve is just sitting there, looking pained, looking to Bruce for an answer that Bruce has already said he can't give. So the Winter Soldier, Elias' Hydra made him, is probably gone for good, Sam adds, answering Clint's question directly. But if he does ever remember any of what they did to him, that is a whole lot of trauma to slam back into a person, even a little bit at a time. And there's no way to predict how he'll react to that. There's no precedent for this, Bruce shrugs, looking both apologetic and frustrated. Sure, there are plenty of case studies on amnesia and both long and short-term damage to the brain, and a handful of psychological studies on POWs. Even some examples of other brainwashing attempts. But there is nothing that really compares to what we're dealing with here. Serum aside, no one else that we know of has ever survived over 70 years of combined brainwashing, torture, and deliberate brain damage. The room falls into a heavy silence as they all struggle to digest that. Eventually, it's Steve who speaks up again. He looks up from where he's been staring blankly at the table in front of him and meets Bruce's gaze like a man determined to stand his ground even as the entire world shakes apart. Do you think he's going to remember what they did to him? Steve asks, and they all politely ignore the fact that his voice cracks a little. Bruce's lips purse into an unhappy line. I don't know. He answers, meeting Steve's eyes with just as much gravity as Steve is leveling on him. But I sincerely hope not. Steve swallows and nods. He goes back to staring at the table for a minute, his throat working and his eyes blinking a little too fast, a little too often. Thank you, he says after a moment. Eyes flicking back up to Bruce and then around to the rest of the table. All of you. This isn't your mess, and I know several of you had, and probably still have, a lot of reservations about helping Bucky after everything. His eyes linger for a moment on Sam and Natasha, who more than anyone knew the risk of trying to save the Winter Soldier. But thank you. Natasha stands, gathering up her plate as casually as though they've only been discussing their next movie night. But she stops on her way to the kitchen and rests a hand briefly on Steve's shoulder. We take care of our own, she pronounces quietly, but with absolute definitude. There's general nodding and murmuring of assent around the table, as everyone takes Natasha's cue as signaling the official end of dinner and start of cleanup. Tony hands his and Steve's plates off to Thor, who nods in acknowledgement. Steve hasn't moved, his head bowed under the weight of Natasha's proclamation as he subtly tries to wipe his wet eyes, so Tony doesn't get up either. He rests a hand on Steve's thigh, carefully to make sure that Steve can see it coming, and squeezes just a little. After a minute, Steve rests his hand on top of Tony's and squeezes back, a silent acknowledgement and a reiteration of his gratitude. Okay, but I have one more question, Clint says. He's sitting on the edge of the island counter, separating the kitchen from the dining room, his legs swinging in the air as he idly tears apart another dinner roll. He has apparently already brushed off the solemnity of the previous conversation, though the air as a whole in the room is much lighter, given the post-dinner routine is just as familiar and reassuring as the preparing dinner routine is. Clint's tone is distinctly casual, which allows Steve to relax enough to roll his eyes slightly and shoot Tony a half-hearted smile before directing his attention toward Clint expectantly. Is it, why is your ass on the counter where we prepare food? Sam snipes, smacking at Clint with a dish towel. No, Clint responds, utterly unconcerned. He catches the towel as Sam flicks it at him again, pulling it out of Sam's grasp and beginning to twirl it idly in the air. Bucky's memories end somewhere around 1940, right? Clint glances at Bruce, then Steve. They both nod in confirmation. Somewhere around there, yeah, Steve says, waiting for Clint's point. Then why, Clint twirls a towel with an extra flourish, licking roll crumbs off of the fingers of his other hand. Isn't he weirded out by you being all big and beefy? Shouldn't he, you know, be expecting Scrawny Steve 1.0? Steve blinks, as though that thought honestly hadn't occurred to him. That is a good question, he agrees slowly, looking at Bruce. He isn't bothered by the metal arm either, Tony points out, idly rubbing at the edge of the arc reactor through his shirt. That's sort of something most people would freak out about. Steve, distracted as he is, notices the tick and reaches out to catch Tony's hand. He brings Tony's hand to his mouth, kissing his fingers lightly in reassurance. Evidence that his later memories aren't really gone, at least not completely, Natasha suggests, delicately swiping the towel out of Clint's grasp and using it to wipe down the counter around Clint. The thing about memory, Bruce says, leaning back against the opposite counter and crossing his arms over his chest, is that there is no one place in the brain where it's stored. Pieces of memory, especially memory connected to sensory stimulus, are stored all over the brain, like making a bunch of backups and spreading them around. Makes it nearly impossible to really wipe out a memory completely. Bucky's memories likely aren't completely gone. He just can't access them. Not the way he should, anyway. And memory rewrites itself based on new sensory input, Sam adds. It happens a lot with trauma as a self-defense mechanism. Certain things get written over to prevent a cognitive disconnect, or to put distance between the trauma and the person remembering it. Huh, Clint says. And he has about 45 seconds to contemplate that information, before Natasha does something that none of them quite catch to dump his ass on the floor beneath the counter so that she can finish wiping it down. Nat, he complains loudly, but makes no effort to get up immediately. Steve has gone quiet again, and Tony knows that he's listening to the conversation, processing everything and filing it away. But Steve also looks absolutely exhausted, as though he might legitimately keel over and fall asleep under the table. Steve is keeping himself together by a thin thread and sheer force of will, and Tony might not always be great with people and their emotions, but he knows what a person who has reached their limit looks like. I think it's time for bed, Tony says quietly, leaning in and murmuring the words into Steve's ear, while the rest of the team go back to bickering and idly discussing the complexities of the human brain. I need to check on Bucky, Steve starts in a half-hearted protest. He's asleep, Tony cuts him off firmly. Jarvis will let us know if he wakes up. Until then, you both need to rest. You can't hover over him 24/7, that isn't going to do either of you any good. Wow, is it weird to be acting as the voice of reason? Tony is so much more comfortable being on the other side of the get your ass to bed conversation, but he figures he can pull it off for one night at least. Tomorrow, he'll call in reinforcements. Sam has always been good at hurting Steve, and Natasha has probably had plenty of practice carting Clint's ass around, and Thor could just pick Steve up and carry him to bed. But for now, Steve is tired enough to be relatively malleable, and he complies without another protest when Tony starts nudging him to his feet. A chorus of distracted goodnights follow them to the elevator, and Steve sags against the wall as soon as the doors close behind them. In a parody of the night before, Tony pokes and prods Steve up to the penthouse and into the bedroom that is effectively theirs now, instead of just Tony's. By the time they get there, Steve has rallied enough to undress himself and brush his teeth before folding down onto the bed. Steve is quiet for several minutes, blinking tiredly at the ceiling while he waits for Tony to finish brushing his own teeth. Did you mean what you said before? He asks, as soon as Tony has come back into the bedroom. Tony pauses on the threshold between the bathroom and the bedroom, feeling slightly ambushed. About us making this work, Steve clarifies, still staring vaguely at the ceiling. Tony sighs and takes his time pulling on a pair of sleep pants before crossing over to the bed. He sits down cross-legged, facing Steve, because this isn't a conversation that can be just brushed off. "Yes," he says, letting the "but" ring heavy in the word to make sure he has Steve's attention. Steve takes a breath and sits up, mirroring Tony's position and watching him warily. He still looks exhausted, but his gaze is sharp and clear, like he's bracing himself to go into battle. "Look, Steve, it's not like you're the only person who's ever cared about two people at once, romantically," Tony says, determinedly ignoring his own awkward fumbling by relying on his usual talent for rambling. "I don't know about back in your day, but that is a thing now in some circles. Polyamory. People make it work. You know, there's this whole theory about humanity actually being biologically evolved to maintain more than one reproductive partner. It has something to do with height and testicles. But the point is, monogamy, it's not the be-all, end-all. It doesn't work for everyone." "Love," Steve says. His voice firm and effectively brings Tony's tirade to a sharp end. "I don't just care about you, Tony." There is almost a note of disdain in his voice as he parries Tony's cop-out, but it's softened by Steve reaching out to run his fingers through Tony's hair. He shifts forward until his knees brush up against Tony's, and it's a little ridiculous, sitting there cross-legged like a couple of high schoolers sharing a deep confession. But Tony can't bring himself to actually protest, and after all, he had initially picked the position. "I know I never said it before," Steve continues, his hand settling against Tony's cheek instead of pulling away. "I think maybe I was lying to myself about it a little bit. I think I was trying to make myself forget what it felt like, because I couldn't reconcile feeling the same way about you as I do about Bucky." Tony's chest feels tight, and he has to force his lungs to inflate. "It's stupid," he tells himself. "But it's not like he's gotten to hear confessions like that aimed at him. Not sincere ones, anyway. Very often." And when Steve is sincere, he is absolutely, devastatingly sincere. "Guess that settles that, then," Tony says, ignoring how breathless he sounds. He reaches up for Steve's hand, pulling it down into his lap, because he feels a little stupid just sitting there with Steve's hand on his face, but he can't bring himself to break the contact. "Does it?" Steve asks, looking heartbreakingly hopeful. "On my end, it does," Tony says. "But it's not that simple." He takes a breath, meeting Steve's eyes, because this is an absolute deal-breaker. "You have to tell him. I refuse to be the other woman, especially in my own goddamn tower." Steve grimaces slightly, but he nods. "I know I have to tell him," he agrees. His eyes are locked on their entwined hands, his fingers rubbing idly at Tony's calluses. "And I will, but there's already so much that he has to deal with right now." Steve falters. "God, we didn't even talk about any of the social changes that have happened. Not really. I mean, he'll be glad, but it's still a lot to accept. So I will tell him. I want to." His fingers tighten around Tony's, and for a moment, Steve almost smiles, soft and fleeting. "But can I wait a couple of days? To give him time to settle, to accept that this is all real, before I throw something like that at him?" He's pleading, asking Tony's forgiveness and understanding in one breath. It's a slippery slope, Tony knows. A couple of days can easily turn into a week, a couple of weeks, and on. But at the same time, Steve isn't wrong. They can't forget the reality that is Bucky's uncertain and precarious state of mind at the moment. So Tony nods. A couple of days, he agrees. We'll see how it goes. But we tell him soon. No sneaking around, no lying. If we're going to do this, whatever this ends up being, informed consent only, that's the rule. Steve nods, all too eagerly, looking relieved. Apparently deciding the conversation is at an end, he surges forward and presses his lips to Tony's, hard and eager, and a little desperate as he practically crawls into Tony's lap. Tony lets him, his body twisting easily to fall back against the pillows, and pulls Steve on top of him. It's nice, after long days of stress and uncertainty, to lose himself in the heat and weight of Steve's body against his. And relief is a heady thing.